We're holding on Ayin Tes Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Now that we've done talking, we're done now talking about the Shlomei Abba B'Chamisha. So now this last Mishnah also deals with animals, but dinim of animals. So they have to do with dinim of animals that they shouldn't go out and damage. The Tosfos Yom Tov wonders. This belongs in the sixth parak on the face of it, where we talk about the dinim of Shein V'Regel. However, the Malachas Shloima answers that up till now, we've been talking basically about dinim D'Oraisa. Now we're going to be bringing in our Mishnah, dinim D'Rabbanan, concerning the care of animals and preventing them from going and causing damage. So the Mishnah says, Ein Megadlin Behema Daka Be'eretz Yisrael. You're not allowed to raise small animals, meaning sheep and goats, in Eretz Yisrael. So the reason is because Rashi explains most fields in Eretz Yisrael at that time belonged to Jews. So therefore, so you have the problem, they're going to go and either that they're going to outright go and graze in other people's fields, which would be stealing, or at the very least, because if they eat in other people's fields, then it causes the ecology, causes the environment of Eretz Yisrael to get damaged and degraded. Historians say similar things, in fact, about many countries, many other countries in the Middle East, where they used to be very fertile, and over time, people grazed sheep and goats over there, and they ate all of the ground cover, and they damaged the trees and whatever, and the result is that those places are half desert. So here, the Chachamim are trying to avoid that taking place in Eretz Yisrael. Which that brings to a discussion. So in later times, when most of Eretz Yisrael is not in the hands of Jews, does that din still apply? Does it apply nowadays, where most of Eretz Yisrael, or at least significant parts of Eretz Yisrael, are back in Jewish hands? There's a good deal of discussion back and forth about all of that, with pros and cons on both sides. In particular, actually, one thing they bring in this connection is an opinion of the Rambam Ifano, who writes in one of his Tshuvas that even when this Gzeira applied, we weren't talking about if a person, for example, wants to raise a sheep and or a goat and keep it like inside a pen, and he's going to always feed it rather than it going out to graze. Then he learns there wouldn't have been a problem in the first place. It's only a problem when it goes out and grazes. Most other Achronim disagree with him, but nevertheless, they bring it as a sniff, as a side reason to maybe be matter such things nowadays. You have various kibbutzim and various other places in Eretz Yisrael where people do commonly raise sheep and goats, and nobody objects. So there's a good deal of discussion about that. Anyway, Avo Megadlin Besuya, but you are allowed to raise sheep and goats in Syria, which are the areas outside Eretz Yisrael proper that David HaMelech conquered. They include parts of today's Syria and Lebanon. They include parts of today's Jordan. You have parts of it. Our Eivar HaYarden, to begin with, was inhabited by Reuven, Magad, Bachatzi, Shevet, Menashe. But then you have other parts of it that David conquered. There are other areas surrounding Eretz Yisrael throughout Shas, as we know, where those are considered like half Eretz Yisrael, half not, on the grounds that David didn't get permission from the Sanhedrin before going and conquering those places. And if he had, they would have told him that, look, you haven't finished conquering all of Eretz Yisrael proper. There are still pockets and enclaves of Canaan here and there. Finish that first before you go on foreign adventures. Anyway, the result is that those lands are, they're not quite like the rest of Chutz La'aretz, but they are not quite like Eretz Yisrael either. And here we're saying, as far as this din of Behema Daka, they're considered like Chutz La'aretz. Also, the Mishnah continues, and when midbaris shall Eretz Yisrael, you would also be allowed to raise such animals in the midbaris of Eretz Yisrael. Now, midbaris we usually translate as deserts, but a lot of times we find, for example, with Moshe grazing Yisrael's sheep, he took them achar hamidbar. He wouldn't take them into the desert. What would he have to feed them? A desert like the Sahara Desert or something, or the Sinai Desert. There'd be nothing to feed them there. So many times the word midbar in Psukim and here in the Mishnah seems to mean like an area of a steppe area, like an area where there's just grassland, like a steppe or a prairie or something, where you don't have much in the way of trees or cultivation or anything like that. So then, Gesundheit, it's a big grassy area where you can pasture animals. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. Ein megadlin tarnegolim b'Yerushalayim. You're not allowed to raise chickens in Yerushalayim if na'at kodshim, because people eat kodshim over there. The Kohanim and even the Yisraelim eat kodshim over there. The problem is chickens regularly peck through the garbage. So therefore, they're likely to bring out of the garbage without realizing it a piece of a sheretz or a piece of a bone, and then be metame that's lying there in the garbage, and then that's going to cause too much a kodshim. So you're not allowed to raise them in Yerushalayim. V'loy koinim be'eretz Yisrael, and koinim anywhere in Eretz Yisrael are not allowed to raise chickens for the same reason, mipnei ataris, because they have to be concerned about tumah v'tahara everywhere in Eretz Yisrael because they're eating tumah. So the same din would apply to them in the rest of Eretz Yisrael as it applies to everybody in Yerushalayim and for the same reason. With that said, again, that Rama Mifano in that Shuvah of his says that maybe again the same kind of thing, only when you let them wander freely and then they're going to go peck in the garbage and they may bring something back. If you raise them in the house, then it might be mutter. So in fact, he brings proofs from other places that sort of thing would be allowed. Continues the Mishnah, Ein Megadlin Chazirin B'chol Makom. You're not allowed to raise pigs anywhere, Eretz Yisrael or Chutz La'aretz, because of an incident that happened, which we're going to learn in the Gemara on Daf Pei Beis. Lo Yigadl Odom Asakelev, and also a person shouldn't raise a dog, and particularly we mean over here, Rashi points out, the kind of dog that bites or barks, and it can cause a woman to miscarry out of fright. So you're not allowed to raise such a dog, Elin can't hoy a kosher b'shalshelas, unless it's tied up with a chain, so it can't hurt anybody. Years ago, I once heard an expression. You know, historically, Jews generally didn't raise dogs, especially after in the times of the Rishonim and the Achronim. Nowadays, it's become somewhat more common that Jews own dogs, but even as recently as 100 years ago, it wasn't. I once saw an expression by the famous writer Shalom Aleichem. He said, if you see a Jew who has a dog, either the Jew is not much of a Jew or the dog is not much of a dog. So it became almost like a cultural marker. Jews generally don't own dogs, although of course there were always exceptions. And again, nowadays it is somewhat more common, and what the ins and outs of it, in fact, are dealt with in post-Gim Achronim. Anyway, continues the Mishnah. In person nishuvim layonim, you're also not allowed to spread out nets to trap doves, because the problem is if you do it too close to the city, you may end up catching doves that belong to people in the city. So you're not allowed to do that. Elim ken hoya rochit mina yishuv shloshim ris, unless the nets are at least 30 ris away from the settled area. We'll see in the Gemara at the end of the parak what exactly we mean by a settled area. 30 ris. Now there are 7.5 ris to the mil. So therefore, this is the equivalent of 4 mil. A mil being 2,000 amos, so around 3,000 feet, according to the Avram Chaim Nar, about 4,000 feet, according to the Chazon Ish. So you're talking 4 mil over here would be between about 12 and 16,000 feet, which is between about 2.5 and 3 miles, roughly. So you would have to keep your nets that far away from this, from any settled area, so they don't accidentally trap doves that belong to other people. The actual definition of a ris, as I said, there are 7.5 of them to the mil, so it comes out a ris is 266 amos, and some mafoshim add and 2/3 to make it exact. And in fact, there are mafoshim who say the name of the measurement should not be ris with a yud, but rather rus with a vav, which therefore resh vav samach equals 266. Where they got such an odd figure from, 7.5 to the mil, Yossel Keller once told me an interesting idea in it. He says, imagine, you know, like this, an amma is defined as the length of a forearm, and between Rav Avram Chaim Na and Chazon Ish, you have the argument, just how long a forearm are we talking about? Now, if a person's foot is approximately 2/3 the length of his forearm, so in the American system of measurements, we have 12 inches to the foot, and then we have 18 inches, according to the Avram Chaim Na, approximately to the forearm to the amma. So he says, imagine that back then they had a similar measurement, which was 2/3 of an amma. So then 266 and 2/3 ammas translated into that measure would come out to 400 foot lengths, which is a nice round number. So maybe that's where they got the concept of a ris from. Anyway, the point is that that's how far you have to keep your nets away from the city. And again, we'll learn the details about that on Duff Pinky Bowl at the end of the Perek Vesachem. So the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, Ein Megadlin Behema Daka Be'Eretz Yisrael. Again, like the Mishnah said, you're not allowed to raise small animals, sheep and goats in Eretz Yisrael. Avo Megadlin B'Choshen Shev Eretz Yisrael. However, you are allowed to raise them in the forests in Eretz Yisrael because we're not so concerned. Nobody lives there anyway. They're not going to be damaging people's fields and trees. In Syria, you would be allowed to raise them even in the settled areas. Needless to say, you'd be allowed to raise them in Chutz La'aretz. It actually points out, it's not that, of course, if they cause damage in Syria or in Chutz La'aretz, it's not like if they cause damage to somebody else's field, your potter, of course, you're going to be chayev. But the point is, we're not concerned to proactively prevent you from raising these behemoth dakas over there. Rather, go ahead and raise them, and if they cause damage, then you'll pay the owner. Then we learn in another braisa, Ein Megadlin Behema Daka Be'Eretz Yisrael, Avo Megadlin B'Midbar Shel Yehuda, but you're allowed to raise them in the Midbar in Yehuda, again, meaning either the actual deserts or the semi-deserts, the areas of basically grassland. Over Midbar Shel Sfar Akoi, also by the same token, you're allowed to raise them in the Midbar that's near the borders of Akoi. Again, you have an area over there which is either desert or grassland. You'd be allowed to raise them over there because, again, nobody lives there. Now, even though we're saying you're not allowed to raise these small animals, however, even in these areas, you're allowed to raise large animals like cattle or like cattle. Now the question is why? I mean, they have to graze also. The reason is because in general we don't make a zera on the tzibur unless the chachamim realize that most of the tzibur is going to be able to manage with that zera. It's because what you can do if you need sheep or goats, you can always bring them from chutz la'aretz. You can always import them when necessary. As opposed to behema gasa, it's going to be much more difficult to do that because people constantly need them for work. People constantly need them to carry things to plow whatever. So therefore, so if the chachamim were to make a rule that you can't keep such animals in Eretz Yisrael, then it would be impossible and nobody would be able to keep that zera anyway. So therefore, the chachamim didn't bother. Now, even though the Chachamim have said that you can't raise small animals in Eretz Yisrael, with the exception of those particular areas that we talked about, and apparently, by the way, when the Braisa mentions those areas, it doesn't necessarily mean that those are the only areas. For example, we have, after all, Bnei Reuven and Bnei Gad wanted their area in Eiver HaYarden because they want to raise sheep and goats because they had a lot of sheep and goats and they found that it would be a good place to graze them. We find, for that matter, there's a pasuk in Shmuel that talks about a forest of Ephraim in Eiver HaYarden, and Rashi explains over there based on a Gemara later on in our Perek that Bnei Ephraim lived across the river. They lived in Eretz Yisrael proper, in Eretz Canaan, but they used to take their animals across to that forest to graze them, and it was allowed because it was common property, so therefore that would be another place that you could raise sheep and goats. So apparently it's not where the Mishnah over here is not therefore saying that an exclusive thing. These are the only places where you can graze animals. The Braisa is just bringing typical places. Continues the Braisa of Afal Pisha Omru Ein Megadlin Behema Daka. Now, even though the Chachamim have said that you can't raise these Behema Daka, these small animals in Eretz Yisrael, Avol Masha Hu Kodim Lodago Shloshim Yom. However, he is allowed to keep them up to 30 days before Yom Tov, because, in other words, for Yom Tov, you're going to need a lot of meat. In the time of the Beis Mikdash, of course, you're going to need animals for Korbanos as well. But even when there's no Beis Mikdash, you still need meat for people to eat on Yom Tov. So you're allowed to keep animals for 30 days before that. The Kodem Mishta Bnoi Shloshim Yom. Similarly, a person's going to be marrying off his son. He's going to be making a wedding. He's also allowed to keep Behemoth Dacus around for 30 days, as long as he doesn't keep the latest ones for 30 days. Meaning Rashi describes, so suppose, for example, he bought various animals, some of them 30 days before Yom Tov, others closer to Yom Tov. He shouldn't think, well, 30 days is 30 days. Therefore, the ones that I bought closer to Yom Tov, I have full 30 days. No, we're saying you have 30 days. You have 30 days, or the Yom Tov, whichever comes first. If you haven't shechted them by 30 days, then you have to do that. And if you and if Yom Tov comes in between, then you have to shech them then for the Yom Tov or for the wedding or whatever, rather than waiting full 30 days. By the way, Tosfos points out over here that Tosfos points out that we're talking about raising them even in the house, so that would be different than the Rama Mifano that we mentioned before, where he says you would be allowed to raise them in the house and feed them yourself. Tosfos is saying that no, if you're talking about grazing them, actually even Behema Gasa would be osur. So even though our Mishnah is only mentioning Behema Daka, the fact is Behema Gasa does pass through as well, and therefore you'd have the same problem that they go and graze in other people's fields. And Tosfos goes on to discuss that in some detail. Tosfos goes on to discuss that in a little bit of detail, that in particular, Tosfos says that what we're saying in our Mishnah is talking about whether you're raising your own animals or whether you're raising them on behalf of somebody else, whether you're a shepherd and somebody gave animals to you to take care of, then the same dinim would apply. Actually, Tosfos says that. On the other hand, Tosfos says yesh omrim, that no, you yourself would not be allowed to raise them. However, you would be allowed to give them to a roya, to give them to a shepherd to raise them and to graze them. And just of course, that shepherd is going to have to be careful that they don't go into other people's fields. So it's a machlokas in Tosfos whether you're allowed to have a shepherd graze them for you. In various places in Shas, in fact, it talks about, we're going to touch on it in a little bit, that often shepherds are taka choshud on that kind of thing, of allowing the animals under their care to go graze in other people's fields, and therefore we often consider them posel la'edus, so the shepherd would have to be the one who takes care not to do that. Okay, so the Gemara says, why do we need that last part? We said you can't keep the animals for 30 days. Obviously, if we said that you're buying them for the Yom Tov or for a wedding, then obviously you have to shech them by then. Still, the Gemara says, Sakadat Hamina, otherwise, without the Braisa telling us, you would have thought, once the Yom Tov has passed, and from when he sold it until now, 30 days have not passed yet. So you would think, he might think, he might think he actually has 30 days, regardless. We shouldn't think that he has 30 days to keep it. Ella, given the nafik le'regel, no, once the Yom Tov or the wedding is over, he has no business keeping around the animal anymore. He has to shecht it. Continues the Braisa. Now, on the other hand, a butcher who is buying lots of animals together, and he's going to sell them on market day, and you can't expect him to just sell them a little at a time, because that's his whole business, is buying and selling animals. So he would be allowed to buy animals, and he would even be able to shech them right away, or even buy them and keep them until market day, which Rashi says would also be, we also give him the 30-day grace period. As long as he doesn't keep the aguna of them 30 days. Now, what do we mean by aguna? Rashi says, you have the classic meaning of aguna that we're all familiar with, but ultimately it comes from the word meaning delayed. Nomi says to her daughters-in-law, why are you coming with me to Eretz Yisrael? She says to Rus and Orpah, halahein teogena, even if hypothetically I were still to have more sons, would you wait around for them until they become adults and are able to marry you? Obviously not. So we see that the word teogena means to wait around, to delay. So Haguna Shemahen would mean the delayed ones. So again, it means, in other words, the last ones that he bought before Yom Tov, the last ones that he bought before market day, we're not going to give him 30 days. He only has until market day, and then he has to sell them. That's how Rashi learns. Tosfos has some difficulties with that. The Tesefta seems to learn differently, and also before we called it Achrona, and now we call it Aguna, and the fact is we didn't even mention anything about Yom HaShuk at all. So rather, Tosfos learns like this. It means a butcher, again, he's going to be shechting the animals and selling the meat, so he regularly buys lots of animals together, so he would be allowed to keep them for as long as now, so he would be allowed to keep them for up to 30 days. Now, as long as the Aguna, eventually he has only one left, eventually he's sold or shechted all the other ones, that last one, he can't keep it more than 30 days. Ah, you're going to say it's only one animal. What's the problem? Nevertheless, that's what we mean, that he can't keep any individual animal for more than 30 days, or another gear says they can't keep it for 30 days.
What's the problem with keeping one 30 days?
So the point problem is that, as we said at the beginning, that with small animals, sheep and goats tend to graze in other people's fields, and they tend to strip off the vegetation, and therefore cause damage to the ecology, and therefore the Chachamim wanted to prevent that. But the primary thing is because they graze in other people's fields. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Shalu Talmidim as Rabbi Gamliel, Mahu Legado, Mahu Legado." So Rabbi Gamliel's Talmidim asked him, "Are you allowed to raise sheep and goats in Eretz Yisrael?" Omelahan Mutter. He says it's Mutter. What do you mean? Well, Tanan Ein Megadlin. What do you mean? The Mishnah says you're not allowed to raise them. So that can't be what they asked him, and that can't be what he answered, because it's a clear Mishnah. And of course, now the Mishnah was finalized by Rebbe, who was long after Rebbe Gamliel, but we have many Mishnayos that go back long before Rebbe's times. And in general, a Stam Mishnah, we assume that everybody agrees with. Rather, we have to understand what Rebbe Gamliel's Tamidim were asking him is, Mahu L'Shachos. Are you allowed to keep the animals? So would the butcher or the one who's preparing them for Yom Tov or whatever, would he be able to keep them even more than 30 days as long as he keeps them in the house? Omelahem mutter. So Rav Gamliel tells them, would be mutter, provided that he doesn't go out and graze it with the rest of the herd, because then you have the same problem that it's going to go and eat in other people's fields. Ela kosher b'kari hamita. Rather, what you do is you tie it to the legs of the bed, like we find people did by the Korban Pesach, where they tied it to the legs of the bed for the 4 days before Pesach. So Rashi learns that it comes out that Rabbi Gamliel is disagreeing with the Chachamim before the Chachamim said you can't keep it, implying even in the house. At most, you have a 30-day grace period, and Rebbe Gamliel evidently is disagreeing with that and saying that if you're keeping it in the house, then it's fine.
But what's the problem? Because there's other animals that are grazing outside that are his animals.
Problem is that they're going to go into other people's fields.
Are there other animals or that particular?
His, any particular animal that he has. Okay. Why
did the Chaim make such a disastrous economic decision to prevent goats and grow rather than just putting barriers and enclosures to contain them? It doesn't make sense.
Well, you know, of course it makes sense. You can't necessarily put it on the owner of every property to put a barrier around his property. Such things cost money. Not everybody had money to spare for such things. If you want to put up a barrier, it was the hate. But the Chacham can't require that every property owner put up a barrier in order that other people should be able to have their sheep and goats. So as we said As we said in the Gemara before, it's not that you need them all the time. You need them, first of all, you have certain areas of Eretz Yisrael where you could raise them and graze them, because again, you have areas that are not settled areas. But second of all, you also have, when you need, you can import them from Chutz Laaretz, as we said. And we have, once you have them, then you have a certain grace period before a time when you're going to have a higher demand for animals like that, so, such as before Yom Tov or before a wedding or whatever, then you have the 30-day grace period. Now, again, Rashi says that Rabbi Gamliel is disagreeing with that whole point and saying that you could even raise it in the house indefinitely, and Rashi learns that Rabbi Gamliel and the Chachamim are disagreeing. However, Tosfos says... The halacha is like a chachamim, it's true, but nevertheless, so Tosfos points out that it's a little hard to say that the chachamim and Rav Gamliel are disagreeing. So rather, Tosfos says, no, what it means is Rav Gamliel is not saying, first of all, you have to tie it to the bed. Practically speaking, when people would keep around an animal for more than a certain amount of time, they would tie it. That was a common way to keep it from running away or whatever, was to tie it to the legs of the bed. So Tosfos learns then that it means that that it means that Rav Gamliel and the Chachamim are not disagreeing, that we're saying that before Yom Tov, even then, the Chachamim are saying you're allowed to keep the animals for a certain amount of time before Yom Tov, and Rav Gamliel is adding that you should realize that doesn't mean to necessarily, when the Chachamim said not to let it go out and graze with the flock. So Rav Gamliel is saying it means, for example, that you go, it means you tie it to the legs of the bed or otherwise keep it indoors so that it doesn't damage somebody else's property. The Rambam learns similarly as well. He also explains it in the same vein that it means you're not allowed to raise Behemoth Daka Be'etz Yisrael. You're allowed to keep it again for 30 days before the Yom Tov or before the wedding, and so forth. As long as you don't let it outdoors, you feed it. You keep it inside the house and feed it there. And again, we did say before that Amami Fano learns that that in general that would be the halacha, even not before Yom Tov and even not before a wedding or whatever. Again, many poskim disagree with him, but still there does exist that shita as well. But basically, the idea was, again, because you can't necessarily expect that everybody is going to fence in their property in a way that's going to prevent animals from getting into it. Throughout the whole Masechta, after all, you could say the same thing in general as far as Niske Shein Beregel. Why am I responsible if my animal goes into your property and damages? Why shouldn't I say, look, you should have put a fence around your property? The answer is because we're not requiring you to do that.
By that very, very same logic, you should forbid any industry agricultural like this, like cows and bulls. And I mean,
cows and bulls. We said, first of all, that it would be a gzeira shein revat sibur yochon lamed ba, because you have a constant need for those as draft animals. You constantly need them for plowing and pulling loads and whatever. You can't expect to have to import them from chutz la'aretz every time you need them. But actually, Tosfos had pointed out, we said this before, that Tosfos pointed out that if we're talking about allowing them to graze freely, then even behema gasa might be a problem. It's true. Even with behema gasa, you would have to be careful to not allow them to graze in other people's property. Yeah. So the Gemara continues, Tanan Abanan, and like I said, you know, Lahavdor, we can contrast and see how it was how it is in other countries in the Middle East, and for that matter, in Eretz Yisrael during the hundreds of years when it wasn't under Jewish control. We see people did allow their sheep and goats to run rampant and eat whatever they want, and the result is that those countries have become like half desert when back in the day they were very fertile countries. So we see the Chachamim had that consideration in mind as well. So the Gemara says, Tanan Rabbanan, Maisa b'chosid echad shayu g'neach milibay. It happened with a certain chosid that he was groaning from his heart. So Rashi explains, in other words, he had a terrible pain in his heart or in his chest. Rashi says, Loi hayu yochal lahoshiv ruchay, he couldn't catch his breath. So either, I've seen different possibilities what kind of disease it was. First of all, Rabbeinu Hananel learns that g'neach milibay means that he was actually coughing up blood, in which case that would suggest that it was some kind of lung disease. When Rashi says over here that he had pain in his chest and he couldn't catch his breath, there's a few possibilities. There was a Frum doctor in Berlin about 100 years ago by the name of Preuss, who wrote a sefer called Biblical and Talmudic Medicine. He suggests over there that maybe this Ganeach Milibay might be angina, where a person has the arteries that feed blood to the heart become narrow, and the blood is not, the heart muscle itself is not getting enough blood, and that causes pain. So it might be that. It might have been acid reflux. It might have been any number of things that cause chest pain. Anyway, who this chosid echad was, by the way, the Gemara elsewhere says that whenever it says chosid echad, it means either Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi or Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Here, in fact, the Tesefta and the Yerushalmi identify clearly that it was Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava. Anyway, v'shalu l'roi, from they asked the doctors what to do for him. V'amru, when the doctor said, "Emay takana ad sheyinat cholav reseach mishachris l'shachris." There's no way of fixing up things for him. There's no cure for him unless he nurses hot milk every morning. So he's going to need hot milk every morning. And where is he going to get hot milk from? So they brought him a goat. They tied it to the legs of the bed. Every morning he would nurse directly from the udder of the animal, and he'd get fresh hot milk. And that apparently that helped alleviate his symptoms. A few days later, his friends, the other Chachamim, came to visit him. Kivin Shiro Osa is should have a carry a mitta. They saw this goat tied to the legs of the bed. Chozru l'achareim. They turned around backwards. They didn't want to stay there anymore. The Umru, and they said, Liskin Mizuyan, Bavesa Shose. What is this? There's an armed robber in this person's house, because here the Chachamim have asked to raise goats because they're going to damage other people's property. So this guy is being over on that. The Anu Nechnosin Etzla, we should go and visit him. Now, what do you mean? Isn't the Kuach Nefesh Doicha Kolatona Kula? So Mao Shah and some other Mephoshim before him say that maybe this wasn't necessarily something that's Pekuach Nefesh. Obviously, it was Pekuach Nefesh, then it's Doicha Kolatona Kula. But in this case, the Chachamim realized this is it's something very uncomfortable, but it doesn't rise to the level of Pekuach Nefesh. On the other hand, the Me'iri says that even if it was a matter of pikuach nefesh, but when it comes to an iser that involves possible damage to other people's property, which is why the Chachamim made this gzera of not raising sheep and goats in the first place, then you have to be machmir on that, even if it's a matter of pikuach nefesh. So therefore, the Chachamim then are faulting this chosidecha, Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, for not doing that. And Yoshvu Bodgu, so then the Chachamim sat down to look into what is this chassid done throughout his life. The only thing they could ever find wrong that he did was this matter of keeping the goat when the Chachamim said, you're not supposed to do that. But Afru B'shasmi Sosa Yomer, even the chassid Echad himself, before he passed away, he says, Yedeani She'en Bi'Oven, I know personally about myself that I have no other Aveira in me, Ela Avoin Oysa Ha'ez, only the avera of keeping that goat shavarti al direi chaverai, and even that not technically that I was doing something wrong, but that I was being over on direi chachamim who said not to have a goat even in the house. So he himself recognized, and he said in his vidui, if this was Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava, by the way, we know he was one of the Asorah Harugei Malchus. We know that he was actually, he's the famous story, he gave smicha in secret to five or six of Rabbi Akiva's Talmidim, and then he stayed there immobile because he couldn't wait, he was too old to run away, and the Romans end up stabbing him. So according to, if it was him, in fact, as the Tosefta and the Yerushalmi identify him, then was saying as he was being stabbed, as he was being killed, he's saying that I know for a fact that this is the only thing I ever did wrong. This was his vidui at the end of his life. If we say it was Rabbi Yehuda ben Rabbi Loi, then as far as we know, Rabbi Yehuda died a natural death. Same thing. Anyway, so we see that even in a case like that, you have to be careful. Continues the Gemara, Rabbi Shmuel. So Rabbi Shmuel says in this connection, or the Maharshal brings a girsa, not Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Shimon Shazuri, who's a Tano we find in various places in Shas. Anyway, mi bale batim shebegolol ha'oyin hoyu beis abba. My father's family used to be among the balabatim, among the well-to-do Yidden in the upper Galil, the area like of Tzfas and Meron, the mountainous areas in the north of Eretz Yisrael. So he says, why were they destroyed? Why were their properties and all destroyed? Show you Marin Bechoshin, because they were grazing their animals in the forest. Now the Gemara is going to ask, one second. We just said before, you're allowed to graze them in the forest. So he himself is going to point out. So they were grazing their behemoth dakas in the forest. And another problem they would do is they would judge dine mominus using a yochid mumcha. Now, technically, you're allowed to do that. When you have a yochid, you have an individual dayan who has the original smicha, ishmi piish, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu, technically he is allowed to judge dine Torah on his own. On the other hand, we have the expression in Pirkei Avos, that says Al tihi don yichidi, she'en don yichidi ela echad. Don't judge as one dayan, because the only one who can judge alone is Hashem. So they were being over on that, and therefore Rabbi Shmuel or Rabbi Shimon Shazuri is saying for that they eventually lost their wealth. Now, you're going to say, what's the problem? They had these forests are right near their houses. So they, and we said before that you're allowed to graze the animals in the forest. So what's the problem? The problem was Sodik Tana Hoysa. The problem was there was a small field that belonged to somebody else in between Umavirin Derech Aleha, and they would bring their animals through that area or next to that area in order to get to the forest. So you have the problem that meanwhile the animals could go and damage that field. Or there's even an explanation. The Ravid says it wasn't even somebody else's field. It was their own field. But still, so obviously, as a matter of halacha, it's allowed to graze there. It's their own field. But nevertheless, the Chachamim didn't like to do that because, again, it damages the environment. And therefore, Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Shimon Chazuri is saying that for that, Hashem eventually caused them to lose their wealth. Okay. More on this topic about raising behemah daka. Now, we said before, you're not allowed to raise behemah daka. And we said also that we said in the Mishnah, you're not allowed to raise pigs and dogs. So, Tana Rabbanan, Roya Sha'osa Tshuva. Suppose you have a shepherd who all this time has been over on this takana of the Chachamim, and he's been raising his own, or Rashi says, we're talking about his own animals, it has to be, because we're going to talk about him selling them, so it can't mean that he's shepherding them on behalf of other people. So he himself is grazing his own animals, he's been over all this time on this Zera of the Chachamim, and now, now he does Tshuva, and he wants to sell, and so now he wants to do good and sell them. Ein machayvin oisa limkur miyad, we're not machayvin to sell them all at once, because he's not going to be able to, and then he's just going to give up on doing tshuva altogether. Ela mocher al yad al yad. Rather, he can sell them at a little at a time to people outside of Yisrael. If he sells them all at once, he's not going to be able to get very much money for them, and then they're going to discourage him from selling them. So therefore, the Chachamim give him a break and say that in that case, he can sell them gradually. Similarly, the same way a ger who inherited dogs or pigs from his father, a goy, died and left him an estate that includes dogs or pigs. So the same thing. We don't require the ger to sell them all right away. He can sell them gradually for the same reason, because otherwise he may say, I can't be bothered at all. The same way, if somebody made a neder that he's going to buy a house, that he's going to get married in Eretz Yisrael, we don't require him to buy the first house that he finds available or to marry the first woman who he finds available. Until he finds the one that's appropriate for him. When he finds the appropriate house or the appropriate shidduch, then he has to fulfill his neder. Again, with the same idea. In other words, a person may make such a neder as a mitzvah. He wants to buy a house in Eretz Yisrael in order to promote the growth of the economy and of the population in Eretz Yisrael. He wants to get married in Eretz Yisrael, figuring that that's more likely to keep him in Eretz Yisrael. Otherwise, he figures there's nothing tying him to Eretz Yisrael. He may go back to Chutz Laaretz, but again, if we require him to buy the first house or take the first shidduch that's offered to him, then he may say, you know what, I don't want to make such a neder, and people are going to be discouraged from making such a neder in the future. So therefore, we allow him to wait until he finds the proper one. And we have an example. There was an example of a particular woman that her son was causing her trouble. So in other words, she was an almana, she was an almana or a grush, or she was a widow or a divorcee. She's raising her son by herself, and her son was giving her a hard time. So she realizes he needs a father. So she jumped up and made a neder, meaning she made a neder on the spot. Whoever comes and offers that he'll marry me, I'm not gonna send him away empty handed. I'll accept his proposal. So non proper people came and offered. Look, you know, we have this lady who's making herself available, and you know, I guess she had a little bit of money or something, and they figured, you know what, here we have an opportunity. And she didn't want to marry such people. When the Chachamim heard what happened, they said, she obviously did not literally mean that every single person who comes, the first person who comes, she's going to accept his offer, his proposal. Rather, she meant the first person who's erlach, the first person who's suited for her, who's not marrying her for her money or her looks or whatever, is the one that she'll accept. So she's not required to accept any proposal that comes to her. Okay. Getting back to the matter of behemah daka, kashem sha'omru ein megadlin behemah daka, the same way as the Chachamim said that you're not allowed to raise behemah daka, sheep and goats in Eretz Yisrael, kach omru ein megadlin chaya daka. The same way you're not allowed to raise small wild animals in Eretz Yisrael, meaning, for example, Rashi says that would include, for example, deer or wolves, for the same reason, because they're going to damage other people's property. Rabbi Shmuel, I remember Gavin Klovim Kufrim, Rabbi Shmuel though says, you are allowed to raise Kufri dogs. What are Kufri dogs? It actually says two possibilities. One is they're small dogs. So like in modern terms, that might be like poodles or other tiny dogs like that. The second possibility, it actually says on the contrary, it means large hunting dogs, where those are not the type to injure and to damage people. Those are the kind that you have for example, like you have like German Shepherds or whatever, which are relatively speaking, safer animals. Anyway, so those are two different explanations and actually what kind of dogs we're talking about. So the Bishmol is allowing you to raise those in Eretz Yisrael. V'chasulim v'koifen v'chodes snoyim. You're also allowed to raise cats and monkeys and chodes snoyim, which the Gemara is going to define in a second. Because they help clean out the house. They help keep mice and rats away because they kill them and eat them. So you're allowed to keep those because those are not prone to going damaging other people's property. And on the contrary, you need those around your house to help keep your property free of mice and rats. So my chodes snoyim, what exactly is a chodes snoyim? Choda means like a weasel or whatever. Snoyim means bushes. So Amar Rav Yehuda, sharetza chautza. It means a sheretz. So the general meaning of a sheretz, by the way, we have the shmona shrotzim that are metame when they're dead. But in general, the word sheretz, it actually explains in several places in Chumash, means an animal that has either no legs or very low legs. So when it runs along on the ground, you don't see it running. You don't see its legs moving. You just see like it looks like it's moving along. So such a thing is called a sheretz. So here it's sharetza chautza. Here it's a sheretz it's a creature called sharetza chautza. There's an explanation. I think Rabbeinu Chananel brings that chautza means the joints of its legs. It means that its legs are very thin, and you can see the joints in its legs very clearly when you pick it up and you see the legs. The ikadami chautza. Others say that the word is not chautza with a tzadik, but chautza with a zayin. Diktini shoke, it's a creature that has small legs or skinny legs. And why is it called Chodes Snoyim, the Roya Bein Avodini? Because it regularly grazes and eats among the thorn bushes. Or my shouts are Dimitai Tok Shoke. Why is it called shouts a Moshe Sheretz? Because it has very low legs. So its legs are very short and very thin. So what is it in modern terms? There's a couple of possibilities that Mephoshim bring up. It may be a porcupine, it may be a marten, which is an animal similar to a weasel. Whatever it is, we're saying you're allowed to keep such animals around because that you have a valid reason for yourself to keep them around, namely that you want them to help keep your property free of other rodents. There's a mission actually elsewhere that discusses a machlokas whether such a creature is considered a chayor or a behema, which is relevant as far as certain areas in halacha. So there you have the discussion what it is exactly. Okay, the Gemara says Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav Osinu Atzmenu Bavel Ka'eretz Yisrael LeBehema Daka. We in Bavel, says Rav Yehuda, who lived his whole life in Bavel, we made ourselves in Bavel as like Eretz Yisrael as far as this din of behema daka. So the same way as we said, the Chachamim made the Takana in Eretz Yisrael that you can't raise Behema Daka, we did the same thing. We accepted that voluntarily in Bavel as well. Rashi points out, because ever since Golas Yechonia, which was about 600 or 700 years before Rabbi Yehuda's times, there were many Talmid Chachamim there, and there's regular settlements of Jews, and therefore, in other words, you have the same issue. Most of the fields in that area, in the central areas of Bavel, most of the fields belong to Jews, and you have the same issue that you don't want them to go and graze in other people's fields. So one time Rav Adaba Ava asked Rav Huna, what of your small animals, your sheep and your goats, what's the deal with them? Why you have Behema Daka? What about we just said that we're careful about it in Bavel, and you Rav Huna are living in Bavel? Omale, so Rav Huna answers, Didan Komintura Lahu Choiva. Our animals, my wife Choiva, is looking after them. So she's making sure they don't go and graze in other people's fields. And in fact, the Shita Mukhubetis brings that he's saying, I trust her implicitly. I know that she's a careful person. She's not going to go and she's a chassidista. She's going to be extra careful about such things. So therefore, I know I can rely on her. Omale, but Rav Adba Abba says, Choyva tikberinu livna. Choyva ought to bury her sons. Meaning, in other words, he's like cursing. He's saying, like, you're relying on her. The fact is, she may not be able to keep them and make sure that they don't actually cause damage. So she, and by extension, you deserve to be punished. Rav Adba Abba is saying for not keeping this gzeira of the chachamim. Tosfos brings two other explanations. One from Aben Hanano. He's not making it as a statement, but rather as a rhetorical question. Is she planning to bury her children? Meaning, in other words, she's so busy taking care of the animals, when is she going to have time to raise the children as well? Then Tosfos brings another explanation, which is that that he's saying, isn't she afraid of that she's going to be punished Min HaShemayim by losing her children, by being over on the Gzeira of the Chachamim? You, Rav Huna, are saying that you rely on her, but what is she relying on? And so the Gemara says, sure enough, because Rav Adba Abba was a tzaddik and what he said came true, according to Rashi, that he was saying it outright as a klala, according to the two explanations in Tosfos, that he was saying it as a rhetorical question. Still, you have something called shgoga shiyotzim with a fnei shalit. You can have a Talmud Chacham says something even inadvertently, and it comes true. So the result was, throughout the rest of Rav Adba Abba's life, none of Rav Huna's children from Choyva survived. So that may mean that Rav Huna had children from other wives that did, but at least the Rav Adba Abba's klala came true. Tosfos, by the way, not Tosfos, Marsha refers to a Gemara in Nazir. We have a different story also involving Rav Adba Abba, where Rav Huna's children, his young boys, had their payas shaved off. And then Rav Adba Abba asks him, what's the deal with that? Aren't you supposed to grow their payas? And he says, because Choyva is cutting their hair, and she being a woman is not chayev in the dinim of keeping payas. And again, Rav Adba Abba says something negative over there also. So he says the same thing. Choyva tikbirinu libna. So Marsha points out, it may have been two things. It may have been the two things together that combined together to cause this very sad result. We learn from this, of course, that a Talmud Chacham has to be careful with what he says. Anyway, continues the Gemara. Ikadamri, another version of, so the first version was that of Yehuda had said in the name of Rab that we act in Bavel, like in Eretz Yisrael, as far as this din of not raising the small animals. Ikadamri, others say it was Rav Huna himself who said, Omer Rav Huna, Omer Rab, we have made ourselves in Bavel, like Eretz Yisrael, as far as not raising Behema Daka, Miki Osa Rav LeBavel, ever since Rav came to Bavel. Now, why is when Rav came to Bavel, why does that make the difference? Rashi says, first of all, because Rav opened up a yeshiva over there and more people started coming to Bavel from other countries, so therefore you had a much larger Jewish population in Bavel from when Rav came. Or the second possibility, Rashi says, it means when Rav came to Bavel, he taught us that he looked around, he saw that most of Bavel was settled by Jews and with an ongoing settlement, and therefore he said the same din has to apply in Bavel as well. Bechlal, we find that by putting things together from the Gemara, and we also have details in Yegedus Reb Shuda Gaon and all, Rav was born in Bavel. He first grew up there. At a fairly young age, he came to Eretz Yisrael. He lived there for many years. He was a Talmud of Rebbe, and afterwards of other Chachamim over there. When he was older, he left Bavel, and he left Eretz Yisrael, rather, and returned to Bavel. And when he returned to Bavel, as Rashi is saying over here, he opened a yeshiva, and it became a much greater Makom Torah than it had been before. So Rav coming to Bavel was like a watershed moment. It was like a pivotal moment in the history of the Jews of Bavel. Like, when we think of, let's say, for example, we talk about World War II and the arrival of the Friedrich Rebbe and the Rebbe and the arrival of many other Gedolei Yisrael to America, and it started turning things around, and America became a whole different place as a result of them. In a similar way, when Rav came to Bavel, then it was a similar kind of thing as far as the history of the Jews of Bavel. So, uh, Rav Tosfos over here brings that another meaning is that, again, Rav is saying that you should know, ever since the times of Yechoniah, for the last few hundred years, you in Bavel, because you had great yeshivas over here, and you had great Mekomis Torah, and large Jewish populations, therefore, all this time, you should have been acting like the Jews of Eretz Yisrael, as far as this din of Behemah Daka, so he's teaching them that something that they should have known all along. So two different versions is it according to Rav Yehuda that people accepted it voluntarily? According to Rav Huna, Rav taught them that this is how it should be. So the Gemara tells, Rav Ushmuel v'Rav Asi iklu l'beis shavua haben. One time, Rav and Shmuel and Rav Asi. Now you have in the Gemara, there's Rav Asi, which is in this story over here, and then you have Rabbi Asi, who we find in many places in Shas, usually together with Rav Ami. They were Talmidim of Rav Yechanan. That's not the one we're talking about over here. He was from a later generation. We're talking about Rav Asi, who was a contemporary of Rav and Shmuel, and he lived in Bavel. Anyway, Iklu Levet Shavua Haben. One time they came to a Shavua HaBen, which means a bris. A bris takes place after a week, after the baby's born. Therefore, it's called Shavua HaBen, the week of the son. Others say that it was that they'd come to a Yeshua HaBen. Rashi explains that the word Yeshua is the word in Aramaic is translated as purkan, which means redemption. Therefore, it was a pidyon HaBen. Tosfos argues on that and says that still the word Yeshua doesn't really fit. Rather, Tosfos brings from Ben Hanano, it means that it was a party in honor of the birth of the child. So then it's called Yeshua HaBen because the baby has like been saved, like been brought out from his confinement in his mother's womb. So therefore it was called Yeshua HaBen. This Tosfos and this Rabbein Hananel and this Tosfos are one of the sources for the concept of a Shalom Zachar, because according to that, it comes out that this Yeshua HaBen was a Shalom Zachar. Or something similar to that, right after the baby was born. Anyway, so we're saying that Rav and Shmuel and Rav Yechanan, or not Rav Yechanan, Rav and Shmuel and Rav Asi all came to this celebration, this Pidyon HaBen, this Bris or Pidyon HaBen or Shalom Zachar, as the case was. Now they had a problem. Rav loy ayo kamei de Shmuel. Rav did not want to go in and before Shmuel because, for reasons that the Gemara is going to explain soon, he wanted to show honor to Shmuel. Shmuel like Ayo Kameh Rav Asi. Shmuel in turn did not want to go. Did not want to go in front of Rav Asi because Rav Asi was older than him, or greater Talmud Chacham than him. Rav Asi like Ayo Kameh Rav, and Rav Asi did not want to go in front of Rav because he was Rav. He was Rav's Talmud. So you have a stalemate over here. Who's going to go in first? Amri Man Mitrach. So they decided. They discussed among themselves. And then on the side of here, it brings a different girsa from Igeris from Shura Gaon, that actually what it was is it wasn't so much an impasse like that. It was rather Rav and Shmuel didn't want to go in front of each other, and Rav Asi didn't want to go in front of Rav because he's Rav's Talmud. Anyway, Amri, so they said, Man Nitrach, who should delay? Who is going to have to stay back and he'll go in later on? They finally decided Nitrach Shmuel. Shmuel should wait. So therefore, the Nesei Rav and Rav Asi, first Rav and Rav Asi should go in together, and then after that, Shmuel will go in afterwards. So the question is, V'nitrach Rav or Rav Asi, why indeed do we do that? Why do we make Shmuel wait and go in last? Why don't we allow him to go in as one of the first? The answer is because essentially it shouldn't really be that Rav should have to show such kavod to Shmuel. Rav was older than Shmuel. So, however, Rav milsa ba'almo da'ovad le'le Shmuel. However, what it was is usually Rav would do this gesture of kavod to Shmuel and allow him to go first. Mishuma hu mais delatye, because there was an earlier time when Rav had inadvertently cursed Shmuel. Adre Rav alei. So, therefore, in the future, Rav took on himself that he's going to show kavod to Shmuel. The story is in Masechta Shabbos, when Rav first came to Bavel, Shmuel found out that Rav is suffering from a stomachache. So Shmuel, being an expert doctor, he invited Rav into his house and gave him a treatment, which was very hard on Rav. And Rav did not realize that this is Shmuel doing it and that Shmuel is doing it for his benefit. And he said, whoever's treating me like that deserves to be cursed. And in fact, that had an effect on Shmuel. Because again, we said what a Talmud Chacham says has an effect. So when Rav realized what happened, that he had inadvertently cursed Shmuel, so from then on, he would show him cover and allow him to go first. But essentially, Rav should always be going first. So in this kind of case, where we have the stalemate over here, who's going to go in first, then we're going to override, we're going to go back to the usual way that Rav should go in before Shmuel, because we have Rav Asi involved over here as well. Okay, so Meanwhile, while this was going on, while they're deciding who goes in first, a cat came and bit off the hand of the child. The child who was bris or pidyon aben or shalom zacho, whatever they were celebrating, a cat came and then and injured and the baby and broke off its hand. Nofak Rav v'dorash. So Rav went out and daushin chosel muta lahorgoi. You're allowed to kill a cat under conditions that the Gemara is going to bring soon. V'osu l'kaima. You're not allowed to keep a cat in your house. The ein b'mishum gezel. There's no issue of stealing when you kill somebody else's cat. The ein b'mishum hoshav aveda l'baylim. And there's no mitzvah of hashavas aveda if somebody loses their cat. So we're going to see soon what kind of cat we're talking about. But first, Tosfos points out that it's not that Rav now made a new takana, because the Gemara is going to ask on him from the Braisa that we learned on Amud Aleph that you're allowed to keep cats in your house. And so what? If it's a new takana, how is there a contradiction from the Braisa? So rather, Tosfos learns that Rav is explaining this has always been the halacha. However, there are Rishonim who disagree. Shita Mukubetzis brings from Rabbeinu Yeshaya, who says that no, actually it was a new takana. Actually, the Rashba says this. The Rashba says it was a new takana, but still, the Brai said clearly said you're allowed to. So why is Rav all of a sudden saying that you can't and you're allowed to kill it, etc.? But first, we have to figure out the kibbutz amrit mutul lahorgoi. If Rav is telling you you're allowed to even kill the animal, mind you, too, also l'kaimai. Why does Rav have to add the point that you're not allowed to keep it in your house? Obviously, if a person is even allowed to kill it, then for sure a person is not allowed to keep it in his house. And the answer is because Mao Detema, without Rav telling you, you would have thought, Mutala Horgoi, you would have said, fine, it means you're allowed to kill it, Isura Leka, but maybe there's no Isur keeping a cat around, Kamash Malon, therefore Rav is saying, no, you should know there's an actual Isur to keep a cat in your house. Amri, so then they ask, and came into Amrit, Ein Memishum Gezel, if Rav is saying that there's no issue of Gezel with it, my new two Ein Memishum Hoshav Aved Labailim, why does he have to add the detail that there's no mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda? Obviously, if you can kill it, then there's no mitzvah of Hashavas Aveda. Omer Ravina la'oilai. So Ravina says, yes, but we mean as far as the skin. If you find somebody else's cat dead, you're allowed to keep the skin. Because since the other guy had no business raising the cat in the first place, then therefore the skin is considered hefker and you're allowed to take it. Or the Rambam and some other Rishonim learn, it means even in the case where you're killing the cat, then you're allowed to keep the skin. Tosfos also points out, now the Gemara, now why didn't the Gemara ask, if he's already saying, Ein b'mishum gezel, there's no issue of gezel, then why does he have to say, Mutal lahorgoi? And this fact is because he starts by saying, Mutal lahorgoi, so therefore there's not such a big deal if he also adds, Ein b'mishum gezel. There's not so much of a wonder why he would say that expression. However, the Gemara says, Mace, we have a contradiction. We learned on Omer Aleph, Reb Shimon Elazar Omer. Actually, on Omer Aleph, we had it as Rabbi Shmuel said. Anyway, he said, Megadlin Klovim Kufrin. We said you're allowed to raise Kufri dogs, where we said, according to the two explanations in Rashi, it means either small dogs or large hunting dogs. Anyway, V'chasulin, you're allowed to raise cats. V'chodes Snoyim, and Chodes Snoyim, which, as we said, means either porcupines or martens or some other creature like that. Because they help clean out the house of mice and rats. So we see you are allowed to raise cats. So if we say that, that Rav is saying a din that applied all along, then how is he not contradicted by the Braisa? And if you say that he's saying a new din, still, why would he say it's osir when the Braisa has clearly said that it's mutter? The answer is, loikasha hoba uchma hoba chivra. It depends whether it's a black cat or a white cat. Rashi says a white cat is more dangerous, it's more moored to harm people. A black cat, not so much. So the Gemara says, "V'hamaisa d'Rav uch mahava." What do you mean, though? The one in the story with Rav and the baby was a black one. The answer is Hosam Uchma Bachivra Haba. That was a black one, but it was the son of a white one. So the father cat was white, and therefore that tendency is transmitted to the children. So the Gemara says, "Well, me boya boya le rab Ravina." But Ravina asks that very question. It's not so simple. De boya Ravina uchma bachivra mahu. What about if you have a black cat, which is the son of a white cat? Is that the kind that's included in this din that you're not allowed to keep it and you can kill it, etc.? And the answer is kikam boya le Ravina, but uchma bachivra bar uchma. The answer is Ravina is talking about where you have the three generations. The first generation was black. The second was white. The third one is black. Then Ravina is wondering whether, yes, the middle generation was white, but is that enough reason to make it dangerous? After all, it came from a black cat, which is not so dangerous. Maisa de Rab, Uchma bar Chivra, bar Chivra Hava, where's the story with Rab? Involved where it was a black cat, the son of a white cat, which in turn was the son of another white cat. That's the kind. There's no suffix. Such a cat is indeed very dangerous. And therefore, even though it itself is black, but it has the genetics of having come from a white cat. And therefore, Rav is saying that that's the kind that's dangerous. You're not allowed to keep it. And if you find one, you can kill it, etc. Okay. Now the Gemara continues. So now the Gemara continues with another piece that's relevant as far as we're talking about promoting the growth of Eretz Yisrael and preventing that animals should go and graze there and cause damage or whatever. So now the Gemara is going to bring some dinim in that connection. First of all, Chabad Biyach Bachan Simon. This is a simon for the names of the Amuroim that we're going to quote now. This is the one place in Shas where we have the word Chabad. Anyway. So that's the Chabad, Rab Acha, Rab Abba, and Rab Adda. That's the Biyach, Abba, Abba, Chia, and Acha. Va'amila, or a third version of it was Amrab Abba Bar Papa Mishum Rab Acha Bar Papa Mishum Rab Chanina Bar Papa. The third version is you have Rab Abba, Rab Acha, and Rab Chanina, which is therefore Beis Ches Nun. Anyway, so whichever chain it was that said the following din. First of all, Masriyan Al Chikuch B'Shabbos. When you have when there's a disease going around of shchin, of boils or other skin eruptions like that are causing people to be itchy and are dangerous to people. So those kinds of things, so that kind of thing, Masriyan, you're allowed to be Masriyan to blow shofar and daven for it, even B'Shabbos, even on Shabbos. Even though usually Masriyan Al Chikuch B'Shabbos, even though normally Shabbos, you're not allowed to blow shofar and daven and say Anenu and things like that, but this kind of thing is considered a dangerous situation, and therefore you're allowed to. Tosfos disagrees and says you still can't blow shofar. It means that they can say Anenu. It means normally you wouldn't say Anenu on Shabbos, but for an emergency like that, where you have a disease like that spreading, then you're allowed to do that on Shabbos. That was the first din they said. The second thing they said is V'delas hanin elas loibim herati posach. When a door is closed in front of a person, it's not going to open for him so easily. Meaning, in other words, when Hashem closes a door in front of a person and prevents him from being matzliach, then it's not going to be opened so quickly, meaning he's going to have to daven a lot to undo his mazel, because he should realize that obviously Hashem, obviously there's something wrong. He doesn't have his mazel, but he should, and therefore he's going to have to daven a lot to Hashem to help him with that. And the third thing, v'halakeach bayis v'eretz Yisrael, when a person buys a house from a goy in Eretz Yisrael, kosvin olav oinei v'afilu b'Shabbos, then you're allowed to write a shtar mechira even on Shabbos. Now the Gemara is going to say soon, what do you mean? You can't write on Shabbos just for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So we'll get to that in a minute. We'll explain all these things. What are these three things doing together? Maratz Chayos points out they all have to do with grabbing the opportunity when you have it. Like this, as soon as they have this itchy disease, then they should be davening for it on Shabbos, because maybe only right now is a Shas Rachmim and their tefillos will be accepted. The second thing, meaning there are times when a person is more likely to have good, than for Hashem to give him good fortune, and times when less likely. So therefore, he should realize to grab the good opportunities when he has them. And the third one, on the Keach Bayis Be'etz Yisrael, was saying that what if the goy afterwards may change his mind and decide not to sell, or something else may go wrong, so therefore grab the opportunity as soon as possible. Okay, so now on the first din, the Gemara says, Mesvi, I have a contradiction. A Braisa says in Masechta Tainis, we're talking about the details of what kind of disasters do you fast and that, what kind of disasters do you fast for, what kind do you blow shofar, what kind do you say anenu, etc. So a Braisa says, Ushar peronias of Isragchus of Ois alatzibur, other kinds of disasters that are threatening the tzibur, for example, itchiness, for example, itchy diseases, Chbogav Zvuv, or for example, you have locusts, you have locusts or flies or sira or wasps, yatush or mosquitoes, or dangerous or wild snakes and scorpions. Meaning normally you have there are always snakes and scorpions around, but shiluach would be like when there's an unusual number of them and they're unusually aggressive. So the Braisa says loy ho masriyin. You don't masriyin. You don't blow shofar or say anenu. Elot soyakim. All you do is individuals say anenu or whatever things in davening to daven to Hashem to save them from that. So you see that chikuch, you see that a skin disease is not enough reason for masriim. And the answer is, loikasha kan balach, kan beyavish. There's a difference between a moist shchin versus a dry one. So one way of looking at it is we mean that so Rashi explains over here that it means that the dry one is worse. The weeping moist one is not so bad. So that's the kind the Braisa is saying in Masechta Tainis that you can, that you need to that you can't daven b'tzibur for it on Shabbos, only be yochid. Here we're saying, on the other hand, a dry one is worse, and that kind you'd be allowed to daven for, even according to Rashi, blow shofar for to daven to Hashem for Rachmanus on Shabbos. The Meiri actually says the other way around. As the Amr Rabbi Shrovan Levi, Shchin Shehevi HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al HaMitzrim, as we find Rabbi Shrovan Levi says, the Shchin, which Hashem brought on the Mitzrim, which obviously was the worst type of Shchin, Lach Mibachutz V'Yobesh Mimifnim. It was wet and moist on the outside, and it was dry on the inside, under the skin. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, Vayihi Shchin Avah Bois, it was a Shchin with boils, Pireach Ba'odim V'Avahema, that are erupting on man and on animal. So we see, in other words, it was erupting with wet liquid, implying, in other words, that under the skin it was dry. So that's the worst kind. So that kind you can be masriya on Shabbos, but not the other kinds. The second thing, videlas hanin elos lebi meheret pasach. We said when the door is closed, it's not going to open so quickly. Maihi, what do we mean by that? Mazutra amar smicha. Mazutra says it means as far as smicha. When a person has the opportunity to get smicha, the original smicha, ish mipi ish, and he doesn't get it at a certain time, then he should realize it might be min hashamayim that he's never going to get it. We actually have examples of that here and there in Shas. We have an example in Bava Metzia, for example, where it says that Rebbe wanted to give smicha to Shmuel, but he wasn't able to. It didn't work out to gather the chacham together or whatever it is. And in fact, Shmuel never did end up getting smicha. And there's other examples of that. So therefore, Mazutra says that's what it means. Rav Ashi Yomer, Rav Ashi says, it doesn't just mean smicha. Kol ha-merin loy, when a person has been treated badly, min ha-shamayim, loy b'mheira metibin loy, it won't be so soon that Hashem is going to do good for him. In other words, so again, as Rashi says, unless he davens a lot, unless he davens to change his mazel, then he should assume it's going to continue the way it was. Rav Achami Difti, Amala Olam in the Tivin Loy. Rav Achami Difti says not just that not very soon is there going to be good done for him. It means that he's never going to have good done for him. However, the Gemara says, Valoihi, no, what Rav Achami Difti is saying is not actually correct. Rav Achami Difti milsa de nafshe hu da amar. Rav Achami Difti is only saying something based on his own personal experience. The Gemara tells in Baba Basra the story where at one point they were planning to appoint Rav Achami Difti as the next Rosh Yeshiva, and in the end they ended up appointing Rav Meir Bar Avashi. So Rav Achami Difti, Tosfos points out over here, for a while Rav Acha figured that maybe eventually they'll change their mind and he'll get the position, but he never did. So eventually he said, but that was only his personal experience, not something that you can generalize to everybody else. Mao Shab points out, by the way, that now usually Tamar Chachamim would run away from such things. They didn't want to be appointed to positions of leadership. So here, Adrabba, what we mean is when Rav Ashi is saying, and when Rav Achami Difti is saying, Kolamirian loy means fakert, if the Tamar Chacham acts in a way, he says, I'm very disappointed by this. I feel that it was a bad thing for me. I should have had this position and I'm not getting it. So he's trying to run after the covered. Then the covered ends up running away from him. And as Rav Ashi says, it's going to be very difficult, or even like Rav Achami Difti says, impossible for him to ever get it. But if he realizes to begin with, it's not Mirian law, it's not that Hashem does badly for him, Adrabba, it's a position he didn't want, then Hashem, that's different. Then Hashem will make it possible for him to get it later on. Okay. The third din, we said, we said if you buy a house from a goy in Eretz Yisrael, you're allowed to write a shtar mechira even on Shabbos. You must have the Shabbos stop the guy. What do you mean? You certainly can't be over on a malacha of Shabbos just for Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. So Ela kid Omar Rava Hossam, rather, we have a similar kind of thing that Rava says in connection with preparations for a bris on Shabbos. Oh, not as far as a bris, rather as far as a choyla she'en by sakana. When you have a person that is sick on Shabbos, he's not dangerously ill, but there is something that needs to be done for him. So then, in such a case, you're allowed to tell a goy to do it. Usually, you have the concept of amir l'nochri. You're not allowed to tell a goy to do something for on Shabbos that you yourself wouldn't be allowed to. But here, where it's for a choyla she'en by sakana, you're allowed to. Hochanami, oimel l'nochri v'oisa, the same way, it doesn't mean to write the shtar yourself. It means to tell the goy to write the shtar for you. Even though usually Amir Lanochri is also Midir Abanan, Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, like Gozer Beir Abanan, but for the sake of settling Eretz Yisrael, the Chachamim did not make that Zera and said you can go ahead and have the Goy write it for you. Tosfos discusses over here as far as other cases in general, the rule in Shulchan Aruch is when you have it for Dvar Mitzvah or for a matter like a Chol HaShem Besakona, then you're allowed to do Amir Lanochri. You also have where it's only also Midir Abanan, then you're allowed to, there are different dinim. Having mentioned this point about buying a house in Eretz Yisrael, the Gemara mentions a similar din, Amr of Shmuel ben Achmeni, Amr of Yenison, Halakeach ir be'Eretz Yisrael, if a person buys a whole city in Eretz Yisrael, we require him, we'll force him to buy land for roads to it from all four directions, Mishum Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, for the sake of the settlement of Eretz Yisrael, because this way, when there are roads to the city in all directions, more people are going to be able to come there and find that it's a good place to live and so forth, and that will promote the growth of the settlement of Eretz Yisrael. And we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, with talking about other dinim that the Chachamim made, even all the way back to Yeshua, for the sake of promoting the growth of the settlement and the environment and everything of Eretz Yisrael.